thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source.
It's just a real pleasure to welcome Michael Pinto. That's head of Pinto Portfolio Strategies. This is an economic think tank, if you will, and he's a registered investment advisor. Just always has the best material, plus we enjoy his economic model. Welcome back, Michael Pinto.
Thanks for having me on the program, Chris.
We appreciate you. We haven't had you on in a while, but why don't you just give us an overview of what you're doing right now?
Well, I mean, I'm sticking pretty much with the bond and bond proxies and gold that have been working for us for almost a year now. We have a little bit of a counter trend rally here. It's actually a pretty sharp one, probably mostly predicated upon a Sino-U.S. trade deal that's going to come early October, which is supposed to, I guess, fix everything in the world. I think there's going to be more of a partial deal where Trump rolls back a little bit of the tariffs, perhaps, and cancels the additional tariffs that are slated to go on, and then comes up with some kind of, I trust you, Mr. Xi, because you're a great guy. If you don't follow through on IP protection and canceling your state-owned enterprise economic model, which will never happen, if that doesn't happen, then after the election, I'll probably put the tariffs back on. But I need a strong economy, and I need quiescence and happiness until the November election. You know, it is just kind of a backyard playground. The point is, you have to ask yourself, does Donald Trump care more about changing China and losing the election, or putting, as you say, a clothespin on his nose and trying his best to pressure China until the election, and then if he gets elected again for another 4 years, then he can really hammer China? I think he really, and to his Trump's credit, by the way, he really wants to change the way China does business with the United States. I think that's something that's to be admired about the man. One of the things that you should admire about him. But if you're asking me, would he rather lose the election by imposing tariffs on China and pushing them to the wall and engendering a U.S. stock market recession or exacerbating a slowdown and killing the stock market just to prove a point?
You know, we've had some folks within the financial community, some top guests come on the show and make some cogent and compelling arguments that we need to learn from our top trading partner. They're the second largest economy now. You know, maybe we could learn from them and collaborate a bit more as opposed to this sort of tit for tat.
Well, Chris, you're dealing with a communist nation. We're dealing with a nation that is absolutely antithetical to everything capitalist that the United States is. So, as Americans are trying to keep our preeminent superpower position in the world, and there's a lot of people, especially some of the neocons in D.C., who don't like China, and they're trying to suppress the rise of that nation. So this is a lot more to do than just trade. I mean, we are trying to make sure that we are the leaders in AI and in technology and, you know, research and medicine. So we want to be the number one. We want to keep that status. We want to keep that status as being the number one economy in the world. And that's part and parcel of what Donald Trump is trying to do. Well, first, let's wrap up what we were trying to say before about the bond proxies and gold. I mean, we had a very sharp sell-off in anything that resembled a bond or bond proxy and precious metals, especially in the miners. The question is this going to be a protracted move? Is it going to be something secular in nature, or is this just a little wiggle and a waggle? You know, if you bought bond proxies and gold for the past year, you had a great, great year. But if you own them for the past few days, you've been wiped out. I mean, some of it didn't. Is this a cyclical move, you know, a counter trend, dead cat bounce, or is this a secular move, something longer term? Well, in early October, we're going to have this semi kind of trade deal wrapped up. So Trump is going to shake hands with Xi Jinping. I can almost virtually guarantee it. He's going to say, listen, the trade tariffs have been, the future tariffs scheduled will be canceled, and we're going to roll back some of the tariffs, perhaps the ones that went on after September 1st. And then you're stuck with these tariffs that are still going to be on. I mean, I don't think Trump's going to cancel all the tariffs. And now you're looking at, okay, you have tariffs that are now going to be in place until after the election. You have China that's still slowing down. You know, China's major problem isn't the tariffs. It's part and parcel in the fact that they have increased their debt from $2 trillion to 40 $2 trillion and still growing at a very rapid pace since the year 2000. Okay, when you grow your debt from $2 trillion to $40 trillion since the year 2000, then you have a huge, gigantic debt bubble. It was state-directed debt. It is unproductive debt. It is debt that is going to lead to a collapse of the Chinese economy. And then you turn to Europe. You see, Europe is still in a malaise, and Europe is not part and parcel of the trade skirmish between the U.S. and China. So Europe is in a recession, if not at least a meltdown of their banking system, which has been occurring for quite some time now. And that's not going to be made better by a partial deal with China. And then you have the fact that central banks are virtually completely out of bullets. So if you look at the ECB, what the ECB, the European Central Bank, just did, is they came and they lowered the deposit rate. I mean, the rate that banks have to pay the ECB to park excess reserves or cash at the central bank, they raised that to 50 basis points. It was 40 basis points, now it's 50 basis points. So, I mean, they did go to a tiered system, but, you know, so what? I mean, does anybody really believe that making interest rates more negative in Europe is a solution to what ails the European economy? There's no structural reforms done. There's no diminution in debt issuance. The central bank, the ECB, is at minus 50 basis points. And they actually launched another round of QE, $20 billion a month, to buy all of the debt issued from Germany. And they're going to have to be, you know, raising capital keys in Italy and Spain and Greece. This is not a long-term solution. This is just another Band-Aid in the dike. So you're sitting with a global economy that's slowing, a debt-disabled global economy that is slowing rapidly, and central banks that are pretty much out of bullets. That's what's going to be on the other end of this semi-partial deal with China. And then I think the yields probably peak out around 2% on the 10-year note in the United States here, and then they start heading back down. And that means your bond and your bond proxies and your gold are going to start to work again. Now, until then, anything's possible. I wouldn't be surprised at all if, until this meeting is consummated in sometime in the early, say, you know, first week in October. Second week in October. So you have another month or so, maybe less, of this angst in the gold and bond proxy arena. But then you probably have to go back to these same trades again, because that's what's been working. I believe bond yields will be heading much lower in the near future, not higher. Now, this is a person, by the way, Chris, who wrote a book called The Coming Bond Market Collapse. I'll hasten to add that one of the reasons why bond yields are going higher and bond prices are crashing around the world right now is because, did you happen to see the annual deficit in the United States? The first 11 months of fiscal 2019 were over $1 trillion in red ink. And that $1 trillion is going to be probably 1.1, 1.2 trillion by the time we get the figures for fiscal year starts in October, will be well over $1 trillion, and it's over $1 trillion as far as the eye can see. The deficit in 2000, and it's the biggest deficit since 2012. And by a large margin from its nadir, where it was, I think, in 2016. So we have a huge increase. You know, by the way, just to put a little perspective, before the Great Recession, Chris, so you listen and understand, we had annual deficits that were a couple of $100 billion. That's the amount of annual red ink. Now, they skyrocketed to $1.4 trillion right after the Great Recession started, so 2008, 2009. We had several years of over $1 trillion, and then after 2012, they dropped below $1 trillion. They went all the way down to about $600 billion. Down, just sounds silly, but it was down to half a trillion dollars in debt. But Chris, this is an annual deficit over $1 trillion. We have 22.5 and rising rapidly $1 trillion national debt. So perhaps you have to ask yourself this question. If we don't have a recession, if we don't have panic and fear driving people into the U.S. bond market and the global bond market, maybe yields should be a lot higher. Don't forget, we don't have QE anymore here in the United States either. Maybe we'll be heading back there in the near term. But I have to ask, let me just throw this one at you. How high do you think Mario Draghi can allow bond yields to go in Europe?
Oh, good luck with that.
How high do you think Mr. Kuroda can allow the JGB yield to go?
Well, it'll collapse their real estate markets.
Collapse the whole economy, Chris. Collapse the whole economy. And even here in the United States, can we go back to it? You know, don't forget what happened in 2000. I'll remind your audience. In late 2018, when the stock market dropped 30% in a matter of a few months, and the credit market got completely shut down, the yield on the 10-year hit 3%, of almost 3%. And the whole market fell, just killed over and died. The stock market and the bond market, for the market for junk bonds. What do you think is going to happen if yields go much higher? I would say the same thing.
Down goes the Titanic.
So they're going to have to go back into QE. They already did so in Europe. I think if this trend in yields continues, what do you think is going to happen to the stock market? The stock market's made up a bunch of very less than desirable individuals. But you hear a parade of these people coming on the financial media telling you how the market has already discounted a recession and lowered interest rates for the Fed. You know, when the U.S. 10-year hit 1.4% just a couple of weeks ago, the market has done all this easing for the Fed, and hence stock prices are fairly valued based on the fact that interest rates are so low. And the housing market is going to be booming because interest rates are so low. Look at the refinancing activity and the purchase activity. Well, if yields continue to rise at this pace and this trajectory, how much longer do you think that argument is going to hold water?
So you painted just such a wonderfully savory outlook for us here. I mean, obviously we need some contingency plans to make sure that our lifeboats are as far away from the economic Titanic as possible.
Well, what I have in mind is something I've been developing for decades. It's the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model. And it contains 20 components, very, very highly specialized, very intricate and complicated components that lets me know where the economy sits in regards to the dynamics of inflation, deflation, and boom and recession. And if I know where the economy is, where it lies on that spectrum, I'll know how to invest. So, you know, I look at very specific things like high yield LIBOR spreads, and I don't want to name all 20 components of my model, but I could tell you this, that whatever that model tells me where I should be, and it's been rigorously backtested, I'll know when to invest in bond and bond proxies, or on the other end, when I should be in stagflationary hedges, which is where, by the way, I think we're eventually headed. I'm not quite sure this disinflationary slow growth cycle has run its course. Like I said before, I laid out the groundwork why I think we still have another leg down in bond yields. But on the other end of this, you know, when you start getting multi-trillion dollar deficits that rise to the level of, you know, banana republic, you know, we only have a $20 trillion economy, and you start getting 10% possibly, and this is without a recession, Chris, you can get 10% annual deficits to GDP. Imagine if you're running a deficit of 10% of GDP. I mean, the Maastricht Treaty has 3% in Europe. So, you know, you could be, you know, three times larger than what would get the United States into the Maastricht Treaty. Who's going to buy all this debt? One of the biggest things that we have to worry about is the eventual implosion of the bond market when bond prices crater and yields start to skyrocket. And there's two things will do that. One is, of course, a recession, a slowdown in the economic growth will blow up at least the junk bonds sphere. It might still, you know, throw some people into the safety of sovereign debt, but at least the junk bond market would blow up, and that would cause a devastating depression, I feel, in the global economy. The other thing you could get, of course, is inflation. Inflation would blow up the bond market, including the junk bond market. So sovereign and junk bonds would blow up. And by the way, I mean, you think inflation is dead and gone. I will tell your audience to look up year-over-year core CPI. That figure was 2.6% year-over-year. 2.6% year-over-year. That is way above the Fed's 2% asinine target for inflation. Core CPI, year over year. So, when they inculcate inflation into the mindset of consumers. I mean, that's, after all, what inflation is. It's when the market deems your currency to be losing its purchasing power on a persistent basis, continuously. Well, then you're going to have inflation start to run intractable, and then what do you think these bond yields are going to do? And then if these bond yields go crazy, you know, we had a record amount of consumer debt just taken out in the first quarter of 2000, record amount of credit card debt taken out, the second quarter of 2019. We had $150 billion worth of corporate bonds that were sold in euros, dollars, and yen in the last week. So, you know, you have a world that's absolutely awash in debt, and this has exactly been engineered by central banks. This is what they wanted. This is what they wanted to occur. What happens when you take interest rates down to the below zero? So you have 30% now of the developed world sovereign debt with a negative yield. I mean, what do you think people are going to do when they get paid to borrow? They borrow a lot more money, and this is pretty much what's happening. So you've developed a world where you have record amount of debt. Interest rates are in the twilight zone, and now on top of that, you have central banks actively, nervously pursuing inflation. I don't know when that's going to blow up. I'm modeling that dynamic, but when it does, watch out.
Okay, listen, you've given us some interesting scenarios here. The implications, I think, are profound. You start to talk about the potential for a global, not a great recession, but a great maybe depression, maybe eclipsing even 1929 through the 1930s. However, their playbook, Michael Pinto, is Keynesian and monetarist. I mean, the first page in their tome is print, 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 monetize, monetize, monetize. So aren't they just going to then print like crazy? So it looks like we're looking first for a big collapse and then an inflationary bonanza?
That's exactly what I say. That's exactly what I say. I've been telling people that that's going to happen for many, many years. We have a slow growth environment. I mean, global growth is crashing, so that part of the prediction is absolutely correct. The investments have been correct. I still think we have another leg down, and then you have the problem of, well, what do we do now? We can't really, in Europe and Japan, we can't lower interest rates. The Fed could never get higher than 2.5%. They're on their way back down to close to zero, if not zero, and then back into QE eventually if it gets bad enough. So what are they going to do? Well, I think you'd have your answer if you come to any kind of Democratic, and even Donald Trump says interest rates should be zero or below. So we're going to have QE, universal basic income, and helicopter money. How's that sound? The question is, Chris, do you just get inflation with that, or do you get stagflation? The absolute worst thing that can happen for the bond market, in particular the junk bond market, which is now, if you look at the United States, $5.4 trillion worth of junk, collateralized loan, and triple B. The lowest quality of debt that there is out there with the lowest covenants, the worst quality of debt, is $5.4 trillion, which is many, many times greater than the subprime market was in 2007. What happens when you have stagflation, when stagflation meets the junk bond high yield market? What do you think happens? When you have recession, slow growth, recession, high yield bonds get shut out of the credit market, people get laid off, junk bond yields skyrocket, and then you throw some inflation on top. I mean, we haven't seen that since the 70s, but in the 1970s, we had a stock market that wasn't anywhere near as overvalued in relation to the economy. And back in the 70s, the total market cap of equity was like 60, 70%. Now it's 150% of the economy, total market cap. What do you think happens when that ratio corrects? Well, it's not going to be pretty at all. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, of all these data points and facts that I have for you and your audience, you can't just be someone who just buys and holds the stock market. You can't be a passively managed pigeon. You can't do it. You have to have an active, robust strategy that lets you know where you should invest in all cycles. Is it deflation? Is it disinflation? Is it recession? Is it stagflation? Is the bond bubble going to burst? I mean, can you imagine just sitting there and wondering what's going to happen with your dollar cost averaging S&P 500 index if one of those two scenarios pans out? And I got to tell you, if you're a scientist or if you study nature or mathematics, you know how powerful mean reversion tends to be. It's a very powerful force in nature. Everything wants to seek its own level. When interest rates mean revert, and asset prices mean revert, you are going to want to be on the other side of that passively managed index ETF, believe me.
For how many decades has the dance between bonds and stocks and your portfolio balancing? You know, it's worked pretty well. I mean, even back in 2008, 2009, you know, when stocks sold off hard, even bonds just flew to the moon. And that was the safe haven for so many folks. So the strategy held up. But the scenario you're painting here, I think, implies these types of correlations will not remain solid. By the way, your mean reversion, exactly right. Someone who's tinkered around with regression analysis can tell you. Some surprising reversions to the mean, and they overshoot, don't they? The extremes. And also, you brought up another interesting thing, that the concept of universal basic income. There's already case studies all throughout Africa, and they're planning in Stockton, California, as well as in Ontario, Canada. These are experimental programs. Finland already underway, as I mentioned, Kenya, where they receive roughly a quarter to a half of a two-income household each month. It hits their bank accounts. It hits their cell phones. They get a little alarm. Free money for everybody.
Yeah, if you look at the fact that bond yields are still at record lows, U.S. 10-year is still way below 2%, a lot of these pension plans and retirement accounts have been pushing more towards the stock portion of the portfolio. So, you know, you might think 60-40 might be a nice split with stocks and some of these public pension plans, but they've been pushed way out on the risk curve. I mean, they own junk bonds and, you know, maybe 80% stocks. You know, the most volatile high beta stocks, and 20%, you know, high yield municipal bonds and debt. And then you ask yourself, well, if the 80% goes down 50%, right? Because that's what happens in recessions, right? And then the 20% you own in bonds might actually go down too in price, right? Yield higher. But even if the 20%, so you know, if you're all in bond, your bond portion of your portfolio, 20% of it is all in U.S. debt, and yields go from 2% to 1%, I mean, you're not going to make much money. You'll probably make about 10% on your money if that's what occurs. So the 80 going to, you know, 80% of your portfolio getting cut in half is not going to at all be balanced out by 20% of your portfolio having a 10-year going from 2 to 1%. That's how the math works on that. So, you know, you could actually lose, because both sectors are in a bubble, you could lose on both of them. And that's what happens when you have both stocks and bonds in massive bubble concurrently. So, that's what I think people are really not understanding. The bond hedged portion of your portfolio is not going to save you, even if yields go down, because they're so low.
Even though the correlation between stocks and bonds holds up really well, they've been in a bubble. They've both been going up on the whole, year after year, decade after decade, and that presents a different type of risk. There's a different exposure. There's a systematic risk that most aren't looking at. They're not expecting.
First of all, I don't invest for what eventually could happen. That's why I created my model. I want to capture all the cycles. So right now, we're pretty much a balanced portfolio. We have some bonds. We kept our gold. We own some aerospace and defense. And we're just waiting to see what happens, what kind of deal happens. I think I close out all of my shorts. So I don't have any short positions in the portfolio right now. I'm just waiting to see this wonderful grand deal from Donald Trump and Xi Jinping. And then I'll watch what happens. I believe I know what's going to happen, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you. Like I said, I don't invest for what I think should happen. I invest for what's happening. Okay? It's a big difference when people just say, you know, one day the U.S. dollar is going to go to zero. Well, that's wonderful. One day bonds are going to soar in yield. Well, that's great too. I might be sympathetic or empathetic to that position, but what do you do right now? Well, I'm probably going to stay where I'm positioned because I think after the disappointment of this, you know, partial deal is consummated, you're going to go back into those same situations. And I'm going to watch and model for Chris for very clear signs that the U.S. has entered into recession. So I'm looking at initial claims. I'm looking at retail sales in a real sense. I'm looking at that high yield spread that I mentioned before. I have, like I said, 10 components, 10 separate components for the economic cycle. I'll watch for that. And when that starts flashing red, then I'll know it's not the time to short junk bonds. Because when they blow up, that's when all the real horrible stuff starts to happen. And then I'll know when to get, short high yield, and I'll get more short the stock market. But listen, who knows? This can go on for quite a long time. All I want to do is, in most cycles, I try to make money for my clients. That's what I do. I don't invest for what eventually, again, not for what eventually is going to happen. What is the cycle? How do I profit from it? Extremely fallible. I make mistakes all the time. The question is, nobody really wants to suck. Okay, sorry to use the word, but you want to be good at what you do. And it takes a lot of work to be good at what you do. And if you don't want to be good at what you do, you can just be a closet indexed person, sit there and shove your money into the shadow ETFs, like the S&P 500, and then hope everything turns out very well for you. But then you'll be completely ignorant of history, first of all, and even more ignorant about what is different this time. The absolute unprecedented conditions that exist.
Why don't you tell folks more about Pento Strategies and all the great stuff you're doing there?
So we have a website, pentoport.com. You could go on there and see all of my commentaries, my media appearances. You can check out my Midweek Reality Check podcast. There's a free 4-week or 5-week trial. It's only $49 a year. You'll get the real data that CNBC doesn't like to talk about, or at least a non-spin on the data. And you'll get my deepest insights of that data, Midweek Reality Check podcast. You could also become a client. We have a minimum of around $100,000. Email here for me is mpento@pentoport.com, and the phone number for the office is 732-772-9500.
All right, listen, my friend, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on the program, Chris.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity Craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit
with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Manny Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Manny Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Manny Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Manny Jewelry trades under the symbols M-E-N-E on the Toronto Exchange and in the U.S. M-E-N-E-F. Remember to sign up to Manny's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Manny Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.